All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Announcements? There are no announcements. And the topic for today, a long-awaited topic, is school models, and in particular, focusing on kind of what our basic model is, also alternative models as charters, magnets, specialty schools. And the superintendent provided us a written document dated October 22nd, 2007, and I guess I would ask him to provide that, present that to the board and whatever we'd like to talk about, and then have discussions among the committee members and the other board members that are here, and see where we go.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Cubsey. The document that I provided you entitled School Organizational Structures really is a descriptive document of the different types of school organizational structures that are possible. It does not attempt to provide advantages, disadvantages, strengths, weaknesses. It's purely descriptive in nature, and I will go through those. I think it's important to understand the differences in the terminology that we use. Basically, when you're looking at school assignment, there's really two very general. Can you hear me? When you're looking at school assignment, there's two very general ways to do that. One is to assign by geography, which is the way that most of our schools, as a matter of fact, most of the schools in the country are assigned, or to assign by choice. So what I'm going to do in the course of this presentation is to look at both of those two ways to do it. Assignment by geography, through most of the history of our country, this was the way that the vast, vast majority of school assignments were made. Only beginning with a couple of exceptions, one being Boston Latin, which was one of the very first public schools in the country, which was also a choice school and still is. The meaning, and those we typically refer to as neighborhood schools, and in the early history of our country, they truly were neighborhood schools. They truly were schools that everybody walked to. Schools were built in very close proximity because population densities were much, much heavier than they are now. If you lived in a city, if you happened to live in the rural parts of our country, neighborhood schools was a misnomer because many of the children rode buses to school even back in the 1920s and 30s. The meaning of neighborhood school then has changed from what that historical connotation was until currently it's a school that's assigned by the district based on some geographic attendance zone. That attendance zone may or may not be contiguous with the school. If you look at our own school assignments here in Madison, most of our schools, their attendance zone is contiguous to the school. But if you look at Stevens School, for example, Stevens School has pockets all across the west side assigned to Stevens School, many of which are very isolated from the actual school itself. The people who go to Stevens School, if you were to try to move them, would come and argue that that is their neighborhood school. So neighborhood school now pretty much has the connotation that it is the school that I am geographically assigned to, which may or may not be in the neighborhood. Our current status, and as I go through this, I'll try to give a current status of each one of these within the district. We actually have 30 elementary schools that would be considered neighborhood schools under this definition. We will have 31 in 2008, 2009. We have 9 middle schools where attendance is determined by an attendance zone, and 4 comprehensive high schools. The second type of assignment are choice schools, and there are several different types, and I'll try to walk through each one and try to explain the difference. The first of those are charter schools, then magnet schools, specialty schools, and alternative schools. And I'll try to walk through a definition of each one of those. Charter schools nationally are enabled by a state statute. In other words, in order to have charter schools in a state, the state must pass a law permitting charter schools. Generally speaking, those charter schools are exempted from some state and or local rules and regulations. They are generally governed by a group or organization under contract with the state or the district. And when I get a little bit further into this, I'll tell you, in Wisconsin's law, with the exception of Milwaukee, they are under contract with a district as opposed to a state. In many states, they are under contract with the state. They must meet accountability standards as defined in the contract. And generally, those contracts run from 3 to 5 years. Wisconsin Statute 118.40 and BOE Policy 10,000 govern how charter schools are run in the state of Wisconsin in our school district. Our charter policy, number 10,000, actually parallels the state law pretty closely. In Wisconsin, charters are contracted with local boards of education, except the Common Council of the City of Milwaukee, the Chancellor of the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee, and on a pilot basis the last few years, the Chancellor of the University of Wisconsin-Parkside and the Milwaukee Area Technical College District Board. They themselves can enter into a contract with a group to operate a public school in Milwaukee. The website U.S. Charter Schools defines the intention of charter school legislation as the following things. They're designed to increase opportunities for learning and access to quality education for all students. They create choice for parents and students within the public school system. They provide a system of accountability for results in public education. They encourage innovative teaching practices. They create new professional opportunities for teachers. And they encourage community and parent involvement in public education. And they leverage improved public education broadly. Generally speaking, the founders, as again defined by the literature in this, they're generally one of three groups of people who found charter schools. They are grassroots organizations of parents, teachers, or community members. They may be entrepreneurs in the case of a for-profit company that would come in, get a charter in school districts, and in some of our urban areas this is particularly true. A company comes in, gets a charter, operates that public school for a profit. And then there are cases where existing schools convert to charters, J.C. Wright in our school district being one of those. There are generally three reasons to create a charter that the literature defines: to realize an educational vision, to gain autonomy, or to serve a special population. The same literature defines the reasons that parents choose charters is because of high academic standards, small class size, innovative approaches, educational philosophies in line with their own. In other words, they believe education should happen a certain way, and a charter school meets their needs as opposed to the normal public school. And in many cases, small size and associated safety, because charter schools on the average in our country serve about 250 students. Our current status, we currently have two charter schools. Nuestro Mundo Dual Language Elementary School is a charter held by a private group, Nuestro Mundo Incorporated, which, as you know, was a grassroots group of parents, staff members, and others who formed it. James C. Wright Middle School is actually a charter held by the school board and was a school, Madison Schools 2000, that we converted into a charter, as the district did. Magnet schools, this is the definition from the U.S. Department of Education. The term magnet school means a public elementary school, public secondary school, public elementary education center, or public secondary education center that offers a special curriculum capable of attracting students of different racial backgrounds. One of the fundamental things about magnet schools is that they are desegregation tools, and they are strictly defined as that. So a magnet school itself, using that term, now I'll talk about specialty schools in a minute, but magnet schools themselves are purely desegregation school tools, and they were designed to try to change the racial balance in a school district, and I'll get to that more in a minute. Magnet schools focus on a theme. That theme may be a content specialization. For example, it may be a performing arts school or a science school or a computer school. Or it focuses on a very specific kind of pedagogical approach. For example, Montessori schools. Magnet schools have controlled enrollment. They are controlled by quotas. Generally, you get into them through a weighted lottery. And that weighted lottery and those quotas are designed to achieve a desired racial balance. Carol?
I'm sorry. That's only in case there's part of a court order, right?
Actually, the term magnet school itself means it's for the purpose of desegregation. Especially when you look at the definitions of these, specialty schools are schools established for other purposes that may look exactly like this. Okay.
But I just want to emphasize because those attributes are ones that sometimes people say we can do.
Yes, no, we can't. Those are only established as the direct result of either a court order in which a school district has found to be a constitutional violator in terms of creating a segregated environment, or have entered into a voluntary agreement with the federal government through the Office of Civil Rights, in which they have basically admitted that they were in fact segregated and have entered into a voluntary agreement. But they are the results of desegregation plans. In a magnet, there's two different ways to go about doing magnets. One is to do magnet schools in which the whole school is focused on a single or multiple themes. Everybody inside the school is in some kind of magnet program. That may be a single program. It may be dual programs. Another way are magnet strands, they're called, in which case a part of the school population is focused on a theme, and the rest of the school is a traditional school in all its means and probably has an assignment. Milwaukee, for example, for a time had this kind of situation where if you went to Washington High School, which was their Computers Unlimited magnet, there was a part of their school, my recollection is about 500 kids who were in a magnet theme, computers, who chose to come there, who came from all over the city of Milwaukee, and then they had about 1,000 or 1,500 kids who lived in an assigned attendance zone around Washington. And those would be strands. A content-focused magnet theme provides an in-depth learning experience in a very narrow range of curriculum. They have expert specialized instructors in the theme. For example, in a performing arts school, the example I gave in here, in a performing arts or a visual arts school, you might have a teacher who teaches sculpture, who is a renowned sculptor. Give an example in Kansas City in our magnet schools. We had a school that was devoted to Olympic athletics, and the instructor in fencing was the Russian national fencing coach. But you have specialized instructors who have tremendous expertise in that field, teaching in that very narrow field. Generally would have specially equipped facilities if needed. You might have different kinds of science labs. You might have those kind of things. But the rest of the curriculum is designed to meet the state and district minimum requirements for graduation. So your real emphasis, all of your electives and everything else, are in that narrow band of curriculum that you're focusing on. The rest of it only gets you the minimum graduation requirements to go out. Just an aside, it doesn't say anything, but one of the most difficult things to do is if you've got five magnet high schools and you've got one that's oriented toward computers and they've got a computer on every desk, and you've got one that's performing arts and they've got an orchestra and they've got all those kind of things, it's very difficult to keep the people in the performing arts school from wanting the computers and the people in the computer school from wanting the performing arts. So trying to keep them pure in terms of what you're doing is one of the most difficult tasks with this thing. Magnet themes that are pedagogy-focused means that the teaching in that school is a full immersion in that pedagogy. So, example, in a Montessori school, that's the way you teach. You teach pure Montessori. Everything you do is done that. It usually has specially equipped facilities, and the teachers are specially trained to provide that kind of pedagogy. Montessori's one. Waldorf schools are one. There are several other kinds that are purely pedagogy-focused. Goals of magnet schools or strands: students voluntarily transfer to a school targeted for desegregation. They attract students based on interest. so that the engagement of the student in learning is assured. In other words, you want children choosing to go there because that's what they're interested in. And then that's the attraction. The MMSD has no magnet schools, obviously. Specialty schools are very, very similar, and the real difference is the reason they are created. Specialty schools are not created for desegregation purposes. Their structures would be very much the same. They would have the same kind of immersion in a narrow range of curriculum. There are no racial quotas. They are generally created to provide an in-depth curricular experience when there's not enough students in a regular school to make that cost effective. So, for example, here in Madison, and I didn't list this as one, but agriculture in our school district is only offered at East High School. There aren't enough people wanting to take agriculture across the other schools to make it a cost-effective offering. So you concentrate your instructors, you concentrate your offerings there. So that's the big, again, remembering that in a magnet school, we're doing that to attract people for the purpose of desegregation. Generally here, we're doing it because there is a group of students who want an in-depth experience in a particular curricular area, and it's not cost-effective to offer it in every single school. Yes.
So agriculture would be considered a specialty course?
Yeah.
Or?
Yeah. We don't treat it as much that way as you would if you were truly doing specialty schools or specialty strands. And when you do that, one of the issues with it always is how you get kids there. That's the problem. And generally speaking, the way we would do it here is the student would go to West, for example, for all their curriculum, and then would go over to East just for agriculture. Most people who do this, they would transfer and would be a full-time student at East, and their whole curriculum would be in agriculture with obviously the other things they need to graduate. But they would spend their full day in that program, generally the way this would be done. We don't do it that way here.
Do you advertise agriculture then in the course catalogs at the other high schools?
No. Yes, we do, I believe. I think that's right. Okay.
Just at East.
We don't put it in anybody else's course catalog? Okay. If we truly were doing it, yeah, if we truly were doing it, it would be in the course catalog. Yeah. But
I saw in the materials that Spring Harbor is a specialty school. In selection of students, can having a balanced population of students that reflects our district, can that be taken into account at all?
No. You cannot consider race at all, and that's always been true. Absent a finding of discrimination and a remedy that would call for that, you cannot consider race in who's assigned there.
So then, as far as assignments, it's just pure lottery, or?
The lottery comes about in our case. The lottery comes about if more people apply for the school than there are seats.
Mm-hmm.
If that didn't happen, then there would be no lottery. So, but both of ours that have admissions were Wright and Spring Harbor being the two. Both of those two are open to anybody, and it's generally first come first serve. And then if you get more than you have seats for, then the lottery kicks in. New Estramundo is the same way. Yeah. So there's no balancing attempted or quotas or anything for anything.
But the way Spring Harbor's attendance area is structured, students who live in the immediate area of Spring Harbor, in the old Spring Harbor neighborhood, have first option, just as the Alice community has first option to New Estramundo. And if we wanted to, in terms of Spring Harbor, we could say that the second option was students, say, from Allied Drive.
Yeah.
And then everybody else has to go through a lottery.
You can establish geographic boundaries. For example, that's when we dealt with our voluntary agreement with the Office of Civil Rights in the mid 80s, the reason why even that plan today I don't believe violates the last Supreme Court ruling is that really the movement wasn't based on race, it was based on geography. And if you've read that Supreme Court ruling, in Supreme Court Justice Kennedy, who was actually the deciding vote, talks about that you can draw boundaries with the knowledge that that boundary may contain a given race that you're trying to move, but as long as you do it geographically, that's acceptable. And so obviously that's what was done with our OCR thing here, and you could do the same thing at Spring Harbor as long as it was based on geography, not based on race. Sure.
Yeah, I think there are a lot of misconceptions about how kids are chosen for Spring Harbor, because I've heard all kinds of things from only a certain number from each elementary school to it is race-based. So I wonder if there's any way we can let people know at those elementary schools that it is, or maybe there is a letter sent out explaining the entrance process.
I honestly don't know. I mean, I know we did, obviously, when we first opened it. I wasn't aware that people didn't understand it. So, I mean, we can certainly send something out. Because Spring Harbor there is a priority for people who live in the old Spring Harbor neighborhood, which is just that area right around the school. And then after that, it is open as long as people apply, and then a lottery if it's more people apply than there are seats. We have one specialty school, which is Spring Harbor, which was actually founded and still operates very much around the area of environmental science.
How was that decided?
We were looking for, you've got to remember at the time we opened Spring Harbor, it was opened primarily because we were overcrowded at Tokyo and Jefferson is the reason why we opened it. And rather than trying to build a new school, we had the Spring Harbor building available. And there was real concern whether anybody would choose to go there. And so obviously if they didn't, we were in deep trouble. So we looked at two attractive factors. One was small class sizes. And Spring Harbor and Wright both were held at 20-1 in the early years. And then in looking at what would be something that would be attractive, environment is very important in Madison. We're a town built on two lakes, and we have a very strong environmental community, and its location really lent itself to that. It's right, obviously, off Spring Harbor. The lake is right there. They have access to a lot of those kind of things. It actually has an Indian mound on the campus and all those kind of things. So given that, and given what we believed was the attraction of environmental science in Madison, was the reason we chose environmental science for it. Typically, if you were going to do this in a desegregation mode, where it's critical that you get certain kinds of balance, these schools, both specialty schools and magnet schools, are really niche schools. Everybody in the district doesn't want to go to a school that is specializing in computers. And so what you would try to do if you were going to do a district-wide one is you would do a market study, just like you would anything else. You do a really in-depth market study, and you find out what would attract people to go here. And I've done many of these across the country, and it's very different from community to community. The one that nearly always will attract people is Montessori. You can put it in a Montessori elementary school. When I was in Kansas City, we had people that rode a bus. 3-year-old kids rode a bus from the suburbs, 60 miles one way every day, to go into the heart of the inner city to go to Montessori elementary schools. But generally speaking, you do a market study to find out what. In the case of Spring Harbor, we were looking at 240 kids. It didn't seem like a good investment of our money. So that's how it came about. The fourth kind of choice program are alternative schools and programs, and we have a very strong and broad group of those. And let me talk a little bit about them. First of all, alternative schools generally are designed for students who are not experiencing success in a typical school setting, and that can be for all kinds of reasons. Most people, when they think about alternative schools, I think about kids who are having behavior issues, but that is not typical. Certainly, there are alternative schools around the country for children with behavior problems, but generally speaking, children have all kinds of reasons that they're not successful, particularly when you get to the high school and a 2,000-student high school. It may just be the 2,000 students is too many. But alternative programs are designed to meet the needs of children who are not being successful in that typical school setting that everybody else is. Assignments may be voluntary, and in the case of our district, they are. Children choose to go to alternative schools. In some districts, they are not. Children are assigned to alternative schools for a variety of reasons based on assessment. It could be academic. It could be behavioral. There can be a number of reasons why children would be assigned to a school. Generally speaking, these alternative schools are most effective in dealing with your school population when you provide a continuum of environments that ranges everything from one-to-one contract kinds of learning with students who really can't work with a group of students at all, up through small, intimate high school settings that would be much like our Shabazz, which is really very, very similar in terms of the structure and everything else to a regular high school. Their curriculum is a little bit different, but it's a very small, intimate setting with a lot of support. So you can have everything in between there. As you know, we have a fairly good continuum of learning environments in our school district. There's really two very different goals here, and they require very different programs. The first would be to provide an opportunity for students to gain skills or accelerate their progress so that they are reintegrated into the regular school. I think one of the mistakes we made for many, many years in alternative education was we took the approach that the right place to be was the typical high school. And if you weren't there and you had to go someplace else, our job was to fix you to go back. And certainly there are cases in which a student may need intensive intervention on a variety of things, and the appropriate placement for that child after that intervention and after they've caught up is back in the typical school. But for many students, that is not true, that going back to the regular school, regardless of the intervention, isn't the appropriate placement. And so you have to provide opportunities for them to complete their high school experience completely in the alternative setting. And we do both of these two things. Looking at our current status, we currently have one elementary program. It's the Landmark Elementary Program, the LEAP program. It is a specific special education program for behavioral students who have behavioral issues. At the middle school, we have three programs. They all are intervention programs that work with the children with the intention of returning them to the typical school. A cluster is one of those. Cluster is not a special education program. NEON is a special education middle school program. Children are assigned there. In some cases, they may be there part of the day. In some cases, they are there all day. But the ultimate intent is that they return to the regular school. We have a joint program with the county called Replay for middle school students, in which we share, it truly is a partnership. We share planning, we share resources. At the high school level, we have three programs that lead to a high school diploma, WorkLearn being one of those, and we're very happy to have a WorkLearn site here now. It's really gone well. As a matter of fact, you never even know they're here. So they're doing something right. But no, that's really gone well here. I think everybody's been excited to have them. They've been very well accepted, and they've really fit in well. But WorkLearn is a program that leads to a high school diploma. Diploma completion, or our night school, is another alternative kind of program that eventually leads to a high school diploma. And then Malcolm Shabazz City High School is the small high school environment that I talked about that also leads to a high school diploma. In Madison, we have chosen that the child will get their diploma from their home high school. In other environments, and Steve and I have talked about this many times, which was the right way to go, in many environments, the alternative programs are a separate school. And we have talked many times about creating Metropolitan High School, in which case they would get their diploma from Metropolitan High School and wouldn't be connected to their home school anymore. But that's not been the route this district has chosen. We also have alternative programs that are designed for intervention and return the student to the regular high school. Alternative education resource options, or ARRO, is really a crossover program with 8th and 9th graders. These are 9th graders that would be retained, or, I mean, 8th graders that would be retained in the 8th grade, or 9th graders who are behind going into the 9th grade. Go to ARRO. It's a very accelerated program with the purpose of catching them up and moving them into the regular high school with enough credits to move ahead. The Credit Recovery and Increasing Skills Program, which operates in two forms, CRIS and TLC are the names of them, but they're both credit recovery. They are individualized programs for students who are coming into the district from corrections, from someplace else. They're coming into the district at a time that it doesn't make sense to fit them into the regular high school. So a lot of this is online learning. We do a credit recovery with them where they go every day, and the intent is to catch them up and get them ready to go into the school at a regular break. And then the school-age parent program is for teen mothers. They go to the SAPAR program, and in our case, they are not required to go to the SAPAR program. That is an option for young ladies who are pregnant. They can go to our school-age parent program, while they're there, they get parenting lessons as well as keeping up with their lessons, and they can stay there for
a total of three
semesters. These are reimbursed programs. These are programs that we operate. They are our teachers. We operate the educational program there, but we are reimbursed. In all but the Dane County Residential Focus Program, we are reimbursed by the state for providing that service. And we provide the service because the facility is located in our school district. We do have classes at the jail. As you know, in Wisconsin, when you get to be 17 years old, you're automatically tried as an adult, and you go to the adult jail. But the stipulation for required public education doesn't end at 17, it ends at 18. So we are required to serve the students in the jail, and we do have, I think, a very fine program there. We also have a program at Huber, at detention, and at shelter. All are parts of the criminal justice system, and we have teachers at all of those reimbursed. We also operate a school at the University of Wisconsin Children's Hospital, that program has been very, very effective, and I guess I admire those teachers about as much as anybody I know. It's the teachers we have at all of these programs, from JO through University Hospital, are all extremely dedicated teachers, because those are all very, very difficult kinds of educational environments. And then the last one is the Dane County Residential Program, which actually started at semester of last year. It's operated in conjunction with us in the county. It is a residential program that's part of the criminal justice system.
Just a question on the hospital program. With the new children's hospital moving out to the American Family area, I don't know whether is that still in our district or is that in Sun Prairie?
No, it's here. It was just done by American Family. Mm-hmm. It's right beside University Hospital.
Okay.
American Family donated a lot of the money for it.
Okay.
Question about the detention program. Students, and I guess I could say the same thing about jail and Huber as well, but students only receive about 2 hours a day in terms of academic instruction?
I think that's right.
About 3 hours, 8:30 to... In detention, it's about 8:30 to 11:45, so about 3 hours. And then there's a time to pull individual students in from 12:30 to 1:30 who need extra help.
Have there been any thoughts about expanding that, particularly, I would say, in the detention area, to expand that out to...
We could certainly talk about that. The allocation there is a 0.8 teacher, and we've added a 0.3 social worker to help with the transitions. One of the biggest issues is that it's short term. We'll have students there for 3 or 4 or 5 days moving in and out. So we felt like we needed a social worker to help with that back and forth communication with the schools. Mm-hmm. We could certainly talk about that, though. And all of the kids' ins and outs are controlled by the jail. We don't have control of who's there, when they come, or when they leave.
And I think they have some control of the time.
Mm-hmm. And one of the things is, in terms of these are, we recover these costs from the county or the state?
State.
For all the, in terms of jail?
The Dane County Residential Program is county funded with us. The others, jail, Hubert Detention Shelter, and UW Hospital, all are state tuition.
Okay. But there, so there could be an opportunity, obviously, to recover those costs if the program was extended, or would this be
we
more?
The question is, could we add the allocation to do a full-day program? We certainly now have the space. Before, we literally didn't have the space there. They ran an afternoon program, and it was a very small one-room operation where we ran school and lunch and all of the activities, where now they do have the space to do that. So we would have to take a look at it.
All right, thank you.
Just, I don't know how far along we are. Okay. If there's any specific questions for the superintendent, but I would like to keep about 45 minutes for discussion among the board on the issue generally, and I'm looking big picture as opposed to getting into the specifics of the programs we offer. So if anyone has a question for the superintendent on the presentation, but otherwise we'll turn to some of the bigger picture questions.
Art, you talked a little bit about the importance of doing kind of a market survey if we're talking about a more extensive specialty school approach. You've had a lot of experience with magnet schools. What are the things, the issues that I think concern this board are equity and how programs can, that we might want to set up, we can be sure serve a true reflection of the student body. What are the issues that we would need to grapple with, and how do we achieve that?
I believe the biggest issue, if you truly want to do specialty schools, whatever they are, I think the biggest issue really is how you get the kids there. By its very nature, if you don't provide transportation wherever that school is located, if you don't provide transportation in some form to that school in a way that is easy for people to access, you're not providing access to your whole city. And consequently, just the way our city happens to be arranged, a lot of times you wouldn't be providing to your most needy population. So transportation is really one of the biggest hurdles. To truly go into a specialty school where you are going to make it attractive, and you're talking about when you provide transportation, you're talking about telling someone, okay, yeah, you live in Memorial, that's where your friends go, but you want to go into health care, so we're going to offer that at La Follette. Making that program intense enough and in-depth enough and with enough equipment and with the right kind of teachers so that it does, in fact, attract people to do that is the second, I think, the second biggest hurdle. But transportation is always the bottom line. I mean, in Kansas City, we were spending $50 million a year. And that was 1991, so I can't imagine what it is today. But
I would like to start kind of going way back to your first slide where you had that kind of the two options were neighborhood schools and, geographic designations or choice designations. And what I'd like, and if Steve would be willing, is as we talk, maybe have one of the flip charts kind of our some of our assumptions. Well, just hold on that. But have one flip chart that kind of deals with some of the things we might feel are some base understandings that we would have or consensus we'd have on some points, if there's anything. Maybe there's not. And the other, maybe assumptions or agreements. And the other one being maybe issues that we think we need to look at more or want to look at more. just so we can keep track of some of these things and then maybe at the end of this be able to have an idea of what the next steps are. And I don't know that we'll know that until we see kind of where we are in some of these things. But if we go back to that very first slide on the geographic assignments versus the choice assignments, I guess what are people's thoughts about that? I mean, from my perspective, I think we heard pretty strongly that people want in Madison want to retain the geographic assignments as the base of the program, our neighborhood schools as the base of what we offer, and that choice schools are something that fits within that, not something that replaces that. I guess I'd be interested in knowing whether people think that that is an agreement, that neighborhood schools stay as the base, and that choice schools fit within that, or what are people's thoughts, I guess, on that very basic?
I'm not sure. I think Johnny may remember this, but I think it was 1995 or 94, the Cheryl Wilhoit, as superintendent, proposed a modification of magnet schools. Actually, it was forced choice. It was combining the attendance areas of three or four of the West Area elementary schools. So it would have this huge attendance area, and each of the schools within that would have a specialty, and that parents were then going to be, would then choose which of those schools they wanted their child to attend. And there were suggestions of the kinds of specialties that they might be, Montessori or fine arts or science. The communities were vehemently against it. There were huge meetings of people saying this is not at all the way they wanted it. And it struck me that, and as a board member, not only did I hear from people who were likely to be directly affected, but there was no support outside of that for the concept. And I don't know at this point whether the community has changed significantly since that period of time. Art, do you remember, was it 94, 95, something like that?
It was right when I came here.
So it was 94.
It's when I met Carol the first time. I actually worked on that with Carol before I came, and it was sort of in 94. I think she started developing in the spring of 94, and it rolled out in the fall of 94.
What was the rationale for doing it?
And the rationale for the people that opposed it, both?
Well, one of the rationales was an issue of disparity in terms of demographics in the schools at that time, the immediate schools that were being affected, and that as well as some unhappiness about the pairing. And it was to replace, I think, Lincoln and Midvale were involved.
I believe it was all the schools in the West attendance area, if I remember correctly.
Were going to be involved, yeah.
There were two or three clusters of schools that would share a common attendance zone, and then each school would have had a specialty.
So it was a way of trying to get each school to be much more reflective of the district population than at that time the distribution of demographics that had occurred, in which you had some schools with very high poverty and some schools with none. I think the most frequent comment I heard from parents was, "We love our schools. Why are you going to make us change?" And that was true across the board.
Can we have an agreement that change is difficult?
Yes.
I think we can put that one on there.
So it sounds though like they were the district had made this decision to to move parents, but they weren't really giving them a choice, something that would make that other school different other than this is going to...
No, the intent was that the schools would be different.
How so?
They would have been very different. They would have been, I mean, one school, for example, would have, maybe Lincoln, would have been a Montessori school. And Midvale would have been a fine and performing arts elementary school. And whoever was the other one in that group, Thoreau, I don't remember what it was going to be, something. But some, so that, and they were... So that they were very, very different. And parents would have a choice within that cluster of where you went. In other words, I could choose to go to the Montessori school. I could choose to go to the fine arts school. I could choose to go to whatever. So they were very, very different schools, and they provided the choice.
And the other thing parents said was, well, at 5 years old, my child is too young for me to decide whether they should go to science or fine arts or something like that.
Right. Well, I guess from... parent perspective of young kids is that I think that most of the parents that I know, and I think this came out in long-range planning, were always happy with our own school because we have those personal connections. That's pretty evident, right? But when I think of like registering my kids, there really isn't. There isn't another choice. There's not many choices in the district. It's when I think of choice, I think of different pedagogies or different focus, and that just doesn't even exist. Or if it does, it would consist of a lot of driving of my kids to go to, you know, Nuestro Mundo. And so my focus, and I think a lot of parents' focus, is to focus on whatever that geographic school is, because there is no option. The thing I always worry about as a global, you know, big picture, is what's the competition, the competing districts doing? And that's where, I guess if I was thinking of parents making choices, they choose to move outside of the district right now, or at least that's anecdotal. Whether that's actually happening or not, I don't know, but you know, those districts are growing. So
I'm wondering whether whether we would have general agreement that while neighborhood schools are the base of what we offer, that there is a strong interest in from the community or from certain people within the community for choices. Would people agree with that? Or
I think it's for me, I would say that there are some people, and I'm not sure how large a group that is, but yeah, I mean, yes, there are some people who have,
so
who
some think, people within the community would like choice schools,
right?
Yes, I would agree with that statement, and I think it would be bigger. But I still think there's a lot of people that don't understand what choices are, mm-hmm. or what options could potentially be. And if options were there, they may tend to take advantage of it. But I agree with you, Ms. Cubs. I think still neighborhood schools are at the base, but there are people that want options.
I think that, you know, my child went to a school that was actually farther from our home than another school. And so, but we considered it our neighborhood school because everyone in the neighborhood went to that school. So, you know, when I know the neighborhood is a base for, meaning geographic proximity to that school you can walk is good for part of our city, but for another part, it doesn't happen that way.
Should we change number one to say geographic assignments as the base? Would that be more accurate?
Well, I guess I would say it depends on whether you're talking about the close proximity of the city of Madison or you're talking about the suburbs. It's like I mean, it's two distinct neighborhoods. I know because I lived in both, and the neighborhood I live in now, we walk everywhere. I don't need a car. And when I lived basically outside of the Beltline, people drove into their garages and closed the door, and there was no walking except for maybe dogs walking. So, I mean, I think that that's one thing that's so hard to get your mind wrapped around, is that Madison is now a larger city. And I wouldn't be comfortable saying that it's always geographic, because there's a strong need for people to be able to walk to their schools, just in certain areas, though.
I think, though, when we're talking about geographic, we're talking about the people in the same geographic area go to the same school, as opposed to the geography of the school.
Basically, the way it's done now.
Yeah.
You know, where you have an attendance area for a school that's drawn based on geography.
Because people at Hawks Landing go to Crestwood, and all the people in Hawks Landing go to Crestwood, even though it's not right by them.
You have clumps. Yep. You have little, you know, if you look at the map, it's
you have boundary lines.
I mean,
so geographic location is the base attendance area. It's kind of like we have now. The number one, second thing, some people would like more choices.
And I really wasn't joking when I said to an agreement on change is difficult.
I
think that is one of the things. Anytime we talk about this, we need to keep in mind, and I think it goes to what Maya was saying, is people typically like the schools that their children are at.
Well, I think that we have all seemed to be concerned about the demographics, and so that whatever that we try to ensure that schools have demographics that are close to what the district average is.
Yep. So people would generally agree with that, I think, right? Mm-hmm. So
just for reminders, change is difficult, and families like the school they are currently attending.
So, Carol's point then?
Carol's point again?
That the school should reflect the demographics of the district, if at all possible.
Would board members agree that the geographic locations and the choices are not an either-or option, that it's something that the district could do both of?
Yeah, I mean, to go back in history again, the open classroom, as originally conceived, was a specialty strand, which was first, I think, at Longfellow, and then was placed at Lincoln. And it is only in the last 10 years that it's really become kind of much more absorbed into the Lincoln-Midvale community. Likewise, Hawthorne was originally structured as a semi-specialty area. It was to have a fine arts focus and serve the geographic area, but also with the intent of attracting students from elsewhere in the district. And it did that a little bit.
What was that?
Hawthorne. When it was first reopened.
And what happened to it?
Well, I think the immediate attendance area grew, and we weren't able to continue. I mean, this was starting in 1990. Hmm. And so by 93, we weren't able to maintain the resources.
My understanding about Hawthorne, too, was it primarily served the kids that were there who may or may not be interested. It was performing arts or something,
right,
like dance
and music.
The kids who are there may or may not be interested in that. So you've got a whole group of kids in the school who aren't interested in what your specialty is. So when you do choice, you want it to be people who want to be
choice.
At that choice.
I was trying to think about this as far as focusing on what we do as a district, what we do really well. And sometimes we don't hear a lot about this, but I'd like the superintendent to comment on it. And that's just like, how successful are we with our alternative schools? Because I think that when I've gone out and looked at some of the programs, they seem like they're very successful. And so it's almost like we leave them off sometimes when we're thinking about all these different options. And I'm wondering, with our changing demographics, if there's a greater need, or does it kind of stay the same? And, you know, I don't want to reinvent the wheel, but it seems like some of these programs are highly successful. So could you speak about that?
Well, I think they are. I'm not sure how, with the specific kind of alternative schools that we have, I'm not sure how much our change in demographics has an effect on that. Because they're really designed to serve children who, for all kinds of reasons, aren't successful in the regular school. So they are very successful. If I was going to do anything, I would probably expand the types that we have. I think, for example, work-learn, we're serving most of those students who, for whom work-learn would be successful. To get into work-learn is not easy. You have to want to go there. You have to go through an interview process. You have to demonstrate that you want to do that, and that's the only way a child's going to be successful. They have to. If you're going into the work-learn program, it's generally because you either have dropped out of school or you are seriously in the process of dropping out of school, and someone has intervened with you to say, would you try this? And so one of the things, and I'm using this example, one of the things you want is the student has to be willing to make that step and go through that process of interview and kind of prove they want to do it, or else they won't be successful there. They've got to be at that point in their life. So we do a pretty good job, I think, at this point. And I think we're serving the vast majority of that population that's needed. But there are certainly other niches for children who aren't being successful in school that we could develop programs for, particularly down toward the end of much more personalized instruction. But I think what we do well.
Can I ask to follow up and maybe be able to put something on the board? What about, and maybe this is basic, but that options to large high schools are important, or something like that? That
or at least the
options to large high schools are important. Options for children.
Oh, option. I'm sorry. Thank you.
Can we add middle schools to that also?
Yeah, I agree. Middle schools as well.
And that's one area we haven't really addressed.
Well, but to give some history again, we did have, I mean, I think Arrow is the connection, but we did try to set up an alternative program for middle schoolers. Actually, it was 7th through 10th graders, and found that it was very, very hard to get middle schoolers, 7th and 8th graders, to go. That parents and kids didn't want them going that far away from the local school. And it eventually we cut out, I think we cut out the 7th grade.
It evolved. We first cut out the middle school portion of it. It was called ALA,
yeah.
Accelerated Learning Academy. We first cut out the middle school portion of it, and then the high school portion of it morphed into what's now Arrow, the 8th and 9th grade kind of transition program.
So I think you're right. We need to think about dealing with middle schoolers who aren't successful in the current standard program, but a citywide program certainly at the time we tried it was not successful in drawing them. And so the question is, what other options do we have? But I think you're right that middle school is an area we need something. Jen?
Just wondering about school within a school and kind of what, and it sounds like, I mean, it's kind of what almost what Carol was referring to before, just in terms of kids weren't successful in a large high school. I don't think it was a middle school program.
No, it was, no,
it was a high school program.
It was a junior and senior.
Okay. What happened with that? And
it went through a lot of iterations over the years. We actually cut funding for it in about half at one point. I think some of the programs, depending on the school and depending on the people who were doing the program, were successful. Many of them weren't. Each one of our high schools still has a special education off-campus alternative. They're not run through our alternative programs here. Each high school has their own alternative program that's special education oriented that is off campus someplace. School within a school, as I said, was very, very, in my view, very, very person dependent. If you had the right teacher in the right circumstance, it seemed to work. But I believe its success rate had gone down over the years from when it first started.
And location became real key. They became we had one at Memorial and one at La Follette, and ended up being 80% Memorial kids, 80% La Follette kids. They became very lopsided based on the school that was housing them. So it really wasn't serving the other two schools.
Because okay. There were always only, there were just two of them.
Okay. Yeah. Let me just ask another question about, in terms of an agreement. And don't know if you're going this direction in terms of transportation, and the cost of the school, does that have, in terms of, would that have to do with whether we could do it or not?
I don't mean to put a weight on it, but I put location of alternatives is important. The transportation piece is key.
Right. But then the cost itself. Now, I mean, the superintendent talking about an Olympic type program.
I wouldn't recommend that.
I mean,
it was sure fun building.
Yeah. I think that, we could go in for Olympic hockey and.
But the costs have to be, I won't say a wash, but cost has to be a concern or a consideration.
Costs of options.
Well, I think so.
No,
I would talk about cost for options.
Right.
Important or consideration, maybe just a consideration. And then maybe what you could also put in transportation for options, a consideration.
Yeah, he's got transportation down at the bottom there.
Okay. Arlene?
Another topic for potential agreement is use of existing space versus new space, that we would tend to use existing buildings and facilities that we have. We're probably not going to go out and purchase a new building.
Or rent space. Do people agree with that?
Do people agree with that?
I think that we need to start thinking about the efficiency of our buildings, too. That's kind of a long-term and possibly not realistic idea, but I agree that we do need to use our current facilities, but with energy costs and the cost of wiring the buildings, and there are just so many expenses that I see in the future that I'd like to, that we just kind of think about that.
I guess I just kind of going with what Ms. Moss was saying. In terms of, like, if a company was going to give us a space for a dollar or something like that, I mean, would you not take it or take them up on it?
What about something like cooperating with others for space or not even just space, cooperating with other organizations to support choice?
Cooperative efforts, yeah. That's fine. I guess I just didn't want to make it so, like, okay, well, it's a either or, we're going to use existing space that's it. No, we're not doing it at all. I think there's things that we could do that, you know, again, a new space would be.
Preference for a space that doesn't cost money.
Jail, we use their space. Hospital, we use their space. We don't get rent.
Yeah.
Partnerships in terms of using space is another option.
Hey, Carol and Beth.
As we look at the possibility of choice
or specialty, that it allows, it enables us to be more successful with our, in meeting our priorities. That ought to be one of our prime considerations.
Beth?
How would we go about doing that?
Well, I think that we have our priorities, and we look at what it is and where we're not being successful in terms of those priorities, and any proposal that we might make or consider, we ought to kind of evaluate it against, is that going to move us closer to where we want to be in terms of, say, all kids completing algebra and geometry.
What do people think about the discussion and Art's presentation on charters and magnets and specialty schools, kind of the different categories of choices, and also entire school versus, I think you call them strands. People have any reactions to that?
When I've looked at, I've been reading a lot about small learning communities and high schools, and some districts, it almost sounds like they're doing some form of like a magnet strand where each pod or school within a school focuses on a certain thing, whether it's technology or... I'm not sure what the success rate is, but they are doing that. So I find that kind of interesting to assign students geographically to a high school, but then giving them choices once they get to the high school instead of just kind of randomly assigning them. I'm not saying it would be an easy thing to do because you don't want overrepresentation of certain kids, but on the other hand, like with girls, for instance, it would be really nice to have programs that are geared towards women going into math and science and figuring out ways to do that and having a lot of support. I know post-secondary, once you get into the university and you're going into a science field, it really helps to have professors that are female, and that hasn't always been the case. And so even post-secondary, the universities are working on those kind of programs so that there's more representation. So that was one thing I thought of, was these magnet strands and how they kind of fit in with high school, or whether they do or not. And then the other thing was with charters.
I think that might be covered under the... Do you think that thought will be covered under where the high school comments on the high school, do you think? Want to make sure we capture. Maybe we want to put... you have alternative programs. Maybe you want to put magnet strands or something.
Magnet strands in the comprehensive.
Why don't you put it down there? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Just specialty.
For specialty. Were you finished? Okay, Carol.
Yeah, I think that it depends a lot on what level we're talking about, because I can see some specialty strands at the high school with the kind of caveats that Maya's talking about, the concern about making sure that there's kind of equitable distribution and that, you know, we don't end up in what used to be true of high schools where you had, you know, set of kids who were going college bound, and then you had the vocational programs, which everybody referred to as the dummies kind of thing. that whatever you do is really drawing a diverse set of kids. I am less certain, let me put it this way. The issue of specialty strands in an elementary or middle school is, I think, pretty complex. I know that, for instance, when we had the open classroom as a pretty standalone program at Lincoln, there was a great deal of friction between the group of kids who was in, not the kids, but the parents' perception of who was in and who was out, and how, I think that in the school itself, the program was pretty well integrated. But I think that we want to avoid a situation in which kids can visibly see that, you know, this specialty strand looks different than all the rest of us, kind of thing.
You think just may have different considerations for high school, or consider high school and elementary differently, or how to?
Well, I think there is an overriding issue of making sure that the specialty strands attract a variety of kids, but I think that there are different issues at the high school and at the elementary school, and I'm not quite sure how it works out in middle school.
Because you have schools should reflect the diversity of the district, or the so maybe you want it schools/strands.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So the magnet strands need to be appropriate.
Schools
should reflect the population of the
schools
and strands.
The strands
should reflect. Just one caution. One of the things that you have to you can prepare kids to make choices, you can give them access to choices, but the one thing you don't want to do is to force them to make a choice. So it's very possible, if you structure a high school this way, that in fact those strands will not reflect the population of the school district for all kinds of reasons, because it's critical that the student be able to go into the strand that is of interest to them. Other than that, they fail. We've disengaged them from the school. So that's one of the real struggles with all this kind of thing, when you don't have a nice court order that lets you do quotas. but you really have to be sure that everybody's prepared to do them all, but in the end, it needs to be their choice.
Well, I was going to say that, actually, and not using those words, superintendent. So, if you're going to have a strand, there has to be an interest there. And sometimes kids or parents or communities are not interested in necessarily what we're offering for a lot of different reasons, as the superintendent said before. One of the things I'm concerned in terms of our community is that we're starting to hear more about people in essence, going back to the old days when, you know, African-American kids are in one class and Latino kids are in another class, and kids who maybe are not as academically advanced as other kids are in one class and other kids are in another. So I'm concerned about that. And I'm concerned about that on a lot of different levels. So I just don't know if we can say that with full certainty, that, you know, the strands can reflect the population of the district. I think we could try. I just don't know if we can do that. And when we go, if we went into a direction of a specialty school, I don't know if you can do that same situation with the school itself. If what attracts kids doesn't attract everyone. So I think that's something that, you know, needs to be considered. So I guess I wouldn't necessarily agree with that.
Well, that they will or they should. You'd probably agree that they should, but you're concerned that they won't.
Ms. Cubs, have you ever seen the show White Shadow?
that the really old basketball show?
Yes, the old basketball show. Yeah.
Ken Howard?
I was watching that the other day. And just give you an example. The school is based, Carver High School, and it's based in Los Angeles. Okay, I've never been to Los Angeles before at all, anything like that. But the school is predominantly African-American. On the team, there's a young man who's a Latino. And the school staff is African-American, or the majority of the people were African-American. They were sitting at the table, and the coach, who was white, says, listen, you don't have anything that reflects this young man, whose nickname is Go-Go Gomez. You have nothing that reflects his culture. Why is he interested in, you know, the autobiography of Malcolm X? And it's kind of like, wow, you know, and the staff was like, yeah, you're right. You're right. And so I guess my point is that, you know, if this is the direction that the district can go, I think we do need to make sure that we have a hard conversation about what is offered and try our best to make sure that it's everyone can have access to it, but we may not get the results that we necessarily want.
Okay, we need to capture on that. Oh, good. What are you writing, Steve? What have you?
Well, I was going to go, may not get the results we're looking for.
Yeah, but I also think that you need a hard discussion as you look at what the magnet strands are. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's very important. So I have Arlene, Maya, Beth.
Now,
To tie in a little bit with what Mr. Winston said, you know, my thought was, you know, all of a sudden we are going to be providing all kinds of options and a lot of different choices. So my question is for the superintendent. This is going to require, if we go this route, very careful planning. How does one, being a district and board, decide if options are needed? If so, what kind of options, what kind of specialties, and go that route?
Well, it's certainly not something you do overnight. I mean,
But to do it right, where does the planning start?
I think to do it right, you first have to make the commitment that that's what you want to do, that you do want to broaden the choice of options and at what levels. Then you need to find out what kinds of options are attractive. Let's say if we're going to do it at the high school, you need to find out what kind of options are attractive to the students that you have. And just as important, something we haven't mentioned here at all, is why are you doing it? I mean, there needs to be a reason why you're doing it. Just having options for the sake of options is not. So why are you doing that? Okay, a typical reason that you would do that is because by offering an in-depth experience in something a child is interested in, they get better connected to the school. That's a reason to do options, not just because everybody wants to have options. So, do you want to do it? What options are attractive to the students? And do those options fit a need that we have so that our students graduate from high school? Because the ultimate goal being you want to create successful adults. So, you don't want to lose sight of that. And then, I would anticipate that you should plan on 2 years of planning from the time you start until you actually implement. You're talking about specialized staff if you're going to do this right. You're talking about staff that can go to the depth and the level you want to go to. You've got to identify equipment. You've got to do things with facilities. And most importantly, you've got to have the curriculum well planned in terms of scope and sequence, what you're going to offer, how deep you're going to go. Because if it's not well planned, kids will bail out. So that would be the way I would go about it.
When we did the superintendent search questionnaire or survey, we had that question number 5 about the future of the school district. Have those results been tallied yet, do you know?
They have not. That's one of our next projects.
That will be a big one. Thank you.
Okay, so I have Maya, Beth, Carol, and then I think we're going to try to say what we're going to do next and wrap up for tonight.
I just wanted to clarify that with Mr. Winston, though, when I was talking about strands. This is a very global conversation, and we're trying to come up with agreement. And I just want to remind folks that the current system has kids checking out. The current system isn't the best, the end-all, be-all, at least in my mind. And I think that as a board, we do need to go back and look at what it is we're trying to accomplish. You know, getting more high school grads, getting more kids graduating from college. And I'm just willing to take that risk and try to figure out how to engage students in different ways, because sometimes I do feel like we're on this island of Madison and that the entire state is trying different things. Our neighboring states are trying different things. And I think this goes back to what Ms. Kubza said, which is change is difficult. I am not under any kind of thought process that this is going to be something we're going to do in 6 months. It's going to take a long time. But there are some very exciting things going on. And one thing I would add that I hope we would be in agreement with, because they are our true partners, is that we come up with a way of figuring out what our teaching staff wants when it comes to these choices. I think that we have a lot of teaching professionals in the district, and I would be interested in seeing what the staff would like to work with. And one reason why I think that choice kind of perception is out there is when you look at the staff that's done classroom-based research. It's always the staff that comes up with some really great ideas on how to engage students. And it seems like if there's anything that we have issues with kind of bringing out, is that a lot of times you can't take those ideas through the whole district. It's difficult. It's expensive. But we now have a whole book full of classroom-based research, and we should take advantage of those resources as well.
Okay, Beth and Carol.
I wanted to just kind of echo a little bit of what Mr. Winston was saying a few minutes ago. I think the idea of the strands is very attractive, but and the superintendent said we really do have to think about this hard. Those strands, well, first of all, I wonder if they could in the long run be a cost-saving feature, because I'm assuming we would have different strands in different high schools, and so we could put all the equipment and all of the in one building. So I'm assuming that that's kind of where we're going with this. I know a lot of people have said to me, why don't you put all the tech in one school, all the something in another school? But getting back to the strands, I think it's so important that we make sure that they are broad enough, that we offer courses that are going to appeal to different learning styles, to different personalities, to different kinds of kids, so that everybody has access to that strand. And it's not going to be one set group whose parents are really fighting hard for something or really pushing their kids to do something specific. So I think I think it sounds really interesting, and I think there's some great opportunities. You know, looking at alternatives, we can look at some kind of embedded alternatives in the strands as well, and really appeal to what kids want to learn. I think it's a really great opportunity, but I do think we have to be very careful when we're planning this.
Carol?
Well, based on what Maya was saying, and the issue of engaging students, that maybe we're starting from the wrong end. I think that the issue, the critical issue, is what do we need to do to engage a broader range of students in what's happening in school. Now, alternative strands is one possible response, but that may not be the best way. I think that we ought to really start out with that question. And I think Maya's idea of talking to staff is a very good idea. And I look at my own kids. My daughter, who was very academically inclined, and yet one of the courses she found very valuable at East was auto mechanics for the non-mechanical inclined. I mean, she took it. She loved it. She felt it was useful. She also went out for cheerleading because she decided that she wanted to have kind of a different life. This is a kid who went on to college who couldn't decide what she was going to major in and ended up with a double major, and only in her last semester of her last year decided she might want to go to med school. So, I mean, the idea that kids could choose in terms of their career, I think, is optimistic. And the fact that they might say, yes, right now I'm interested in computers, but maybe those are the kids you really don't want to put in a program that focuses on computers. I mean, my youngest son, I took him to a Montessori, I looked at a Montessori program for him, and I realized that it's a very structured program. Well, this is a kid who structures not only his life, but mine and everybody else's, and I decided he didn't need that kind of thing. He needed a program that would encourage him to be a little bit freer. So I think that as we look at things, we really need to start more at the kids and what would be best in terms of their progression, rather than starting at here are some great ideas that we think are exciting.
So how? I'm not, focus on needs of kids as
well. I think the primary question is how do we engage a broader range of kids in their own learning at the high school level?
Okay.
Well, I guess we could say across the board, high school is where we see it most as a critical issue, but obviously middle school is also one.
Okay, Johnny, and then we'll wrap up.
Well, I was just going to say, you know, the superintendent talked about a study. I mean, is that something that maybe we want to consider at least talking about? And, I mean, I guess it doesn't mean that we have to do anything, but... We're not going that far just yet.
Yeah, that's what I would say. That's a little further than... I guess what I would like to see as the wrap-up for this meeting and where we go from here is first that we get this list of kind of the discussion topics that we had tonight, and that we all get copies and the public gets copies of that. And I think this was a really great start. It's a really good list. And I think we have had some... It takes us to kind of the starting point that the superintendent raised, that others, why are we doing this? Do we want to broaden options? At what levels? What options are attractive? And I think it would make sense for us to come back and really address the issues of why are we doing this? What do we want to accomplish? Do we want to broaden options? And get some consensus on that, because I think once we can have that discussion, then we can better figure out what the next steps are. But I think it is important that we have general agreement on what we're trying to accomplish and what the basis of our decisions would be. So I would ask that be... the topic for a future meeting, probably in December, since we've already got something in November. The other thing I would like to do is that we talked last year about revising the charter school policy. I would like the committee to take that on and look at a revision of the policy sometime in the future. I don't know exactly when that will be yet, but that would be something I would like us to do. And also, I'd like to float the idea about putting
our policy provisions regarding educational options all into one chapter. Right now, they're, I think, mostly in the public instruction section, and then we have the charter school as a whole separate chapter. I would really, I'd like to see whether people would be interested in putting all of the educational options in a chapter, probably with the charter schools, so it's clear what's offered. I mean, there's nobody's committing, but that would be one thing that we want to look at. So does that game plan sound like a reasonable way to go ahead on our meeting in December and focusing on the topics that I mentioned?
That's fine with me. One thing that, about what we talked about in the superintendent's presentation, though, I would like to find out how do people know about the specialty schools that we have or the charter school. How is recruitment done? How, you know, how, and again, I don't, I think that would be part of this, but. Well, let's make it broad range, but we know who we're talking about.
Well, I think if we want to get a memo from the Spring Harbor principal on what's done to recruit, that would be, we could get that. Probably
is that all right?
Easy.
Okay. But then, let also the broad picture one, though.
And how do we let people know about alternatives?
Right. Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, thank you, everyone. I think it was a really good discussion, and we'll see where we go.